It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 12th day of August 2021. It is a Thursday, a thorn in the side Thursday. And this is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. That's where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room. If you pop in right now, you'll be greeted yourself an early arriver. You will be greeted by the other early arrivers, namely Anatole and Roger in Oregon and Squeaky and Stockton Larry, and capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although he is a third stage guild navigator, is on a space folding strike until it becomes a little bit, cool enough not to scorch one's fingers while folding the said space. Yeah, hi, I'm Robin, and just as I said, I mentioned last night, my apologies for having to end the show only halfway done, but every month I've got two nights when I have to do that, and last night was one of them, tonight is the other one. But we'll get 2 hours of cussing and discussing in this evening, and then I've got to do my meeting thing. So we will certainly try to make the best of it. And God knows, being a thorn in the side Thursday, there are, it's a sticker bush that doesn't even have the esoteric benefit of lovely blooms at the end of all the thorns. No. And so we'll get right after that in a moment. But every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so that means we send thanks out to our 12th day of the month subscribers. And that indeed means thank you kindly to Paul. Thank you so very much, Paul. And Paul is our only subscriber for the 12th day of the month. We're into that part of the month that gets kind of, thin. But thank you, Paul, for, I was wrong. No, there are two on thanks also to Gary. And by the way, I hope your recovery from COVID continues to go well, Gary. I've been thinking about you, and I hope you're bouncing back. So those are our two 12th day of the month subscribers. Thank you both so very kindly. And where's our fundraising stand? Oh, God. It is $1,200. Mm-hmm. $1,200. That means that we finished fundraising for last week, and we've gotten 100. Maybe 100 of Monday, nothing of Tuesday, nothing of Wednesday, and of course nothing of today. So that's where it stands, and that makes for a tough week. And hopefully we can knock out some portion of it this evening. If we could,
get Monday and some part of Tuesday funded or anything, just so we don't have, and let's see, if we don't want a four-digit Friday on the Front Porch Community Made Miracle, and those are awfully hard to achieve, if we'd like to do that, then we need to get it down to, we need to raise like $500. And that would mean that we would be looking at $501, actually, because that would mean we would be looking at $999 fundraising goal for Community Made Miracle for Friday. And there are bills that keep this program on the air that are awaiting payment even as we speak, okay? Let's cross our fingers and see if we can get a leg up on a Community Made Miracle, okay? Thank you. Thank you so very much. I wish there was some other way to do this, but I haven't figured it out yet. Let's see here. As we jump into this Thorn in the Side Thursday, a particular one little story caught my eye, and it is indeed a dandy. Let's see here. Where'd it go? We go to Tennistan for this. For some reason or another, Tennistan has been making it into the news of late. And, you know, some schools are going back. There's open defiance of, among other things, down in Florida. Open defiance by some school systems like Broward and Alachua. Although I heard it pronounced Alachua. Which one's right? Some Florida expert let me know, please, from the Horn Ad Hoc Research Department. Alachua or Alachua? But anyway, several counties in Florida are openly defying white supremacist-adjacent Ron Monkey Up DeClantis, the governor down there, the man who became governor only with the active help of real, live, honest-to-God, no-kidding Nazis, and the people who decided that they felt comfortable voting the same way as real live, no kidding Nazis. Well, he's a bioterrorist. He is a merchant of death. Ron Monkey Up DeClantis is, because he wants to forbid masks and mask mandates in school. He's using taxpayer money to let butthurt anti-vax, anti-mask parents send their kids to religion industry schools if they don't like having to wear a mask, they don't like their kid wearing a mask and trying to keep from getting the Trump pandemic. Right, sure, you know how it goes. Well, up in Tennistan, they've got a plan in some county school systems where masks are mandatory, but parents can send in an opt-out form. Yeah, parents can opt out of the mask mandate for their children, which means it's not a mandate at all. And so one mom... great, that's good. Oh, cowbell, early cowbell. For Steve in New York, with a new name for Ron Monkey Up DeClantis. The governor of Florida is the Floridick. Hence the cowbell, yes. Oh, and thank you very kindly to Ralphs. Ralphs is offering up a $50 challenge for Mike Lindell's cyber symposium. Maybe it was a cyber chimposium. Anyway, it was a humongous flop. Ralph says, LOL, and the Dominion court case going on. Yeah, gee, Mr. Meth Pillow, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. There's a $50 challenge. That'll knock out $100 of the $501 that we need to raise this evening, so we're not looking at a four-digit miracle tomorrow. Thank you, Ralph. Thank you so very much. I'm glad. Anatole says, I love it. Floridick. And that's right up there with what was yesterday's new word, courtesy of Reverbo. Spreadnecks. So to use that in a sentence, spreadnecks in Tennistan can opt their precious pumpkins out of a requirement that is actually designed to keep the spreadnecks precious pumpkin children from getting, you know, the disease, the plague. And it didn't sit well with one, and see, this is another thing that goes with it. This is a reminder that we do well not to simply lump all people in these stand states into one ignorant mass. There are plenty of intelligent people in the stand states, and this mom in the Chattanooga area school system is one of them. She wrote to the Hamilton County Department of Education Board, and the board members about the opt-out policy for the mask mandate without actually mentioning the mask mandate. This is brilliant. Good evening. I'm writing to request the parent opt-out form to opt out of the school dress code. As the parent of a daughter at East Hamilton, I find the school's dress code policy to be misogynistic and detrimental to the self-esteem of young women. Rather than shaming young women into covering their shoulders and other parts of their body, I believe we should empower female students to have agency over their own bodies and to wear clothing that is comfortable for them and contributes to their ability to enhance their learning experience. In light of the opt-out option related to the recently announced mask mandate, I can only assume that parents are now in a position to pick and choose the school policies to which their child should be subject. As someone who holds a strong commitment to my feminist ideals and my desire to raise my daughter to be a strong and empowered woman able to make choices for herself, I find that the school's dress code policy does not align with my belief system. I therefore intend to opt out of this policy and send my daughter to school in spaghetti straps, leggings, cutoffs, and anything else she feels comfortable wearing to school. Please make a note that she is not under any circumstances to be dress coded, as I have clearly communicated my decision to opt out of this policy. Thank you. And the sender's name. That's brilliant. And, you know, not that she's listening or anything, but a cowbell to that enlightened, intelligent mom somewhere in the Chattanooga, Tennessee area. If you want to see it for yourself, you can go on Twitter and go to @TheTNHoller. In other words, the Tennessee Holler. Yeah. That's fantastic. And it would be kind of, I don't know, it would require the child to participate and mom be willing to follow through on it. I despise dress codes in the first place, but this isn't about dress codes. This is about if parents can pick and choose which school policies they wish to follow in one regard, well, sauce for the goose is sauce for the gander. And, you know, we can extend it in other places. For instance, I wonder if there are any virulently anti-smoking mask opposers. Because, pretty much all over the country, not entirely, but pretty much, You can bail out. I mean, all over the country, for the most part, you can't smoke indoors anymore, and you can't sit down. I know there are exceptions to the rule, sure, but you can't sit down and light up at a restaurant after dinner. No matter how pleasant the postprandial cigarette may be, you can't do it. You got to go outside. So I wonder how many anti-maskers would like it if people who smoke just started smoking indoors around them and said, well, no, I just don't agree with that rule. You know how you don't agree with masking? Well, I don't agree with that rule. So, you know, you can fuck right off. How about stop signs? I mean, granted, it's a grave risk to public safety to ignore stop signs. But, you know, the anti-maskers, They think they don't have to. Right, sure. So I thought that was a really great little story and a good way to start the program. Oh, and by the way, Let's go. I didn't get to Joey's journal yesterday, so let's get that in. I thought we might address the fact, Joey writes, that the maggot morons are choosing to be duped by their leaders and not getting vaccinated. First, there's Rand Paul and that thing on his head. I saw a story, by the way, this is not Joey, this is me. I saw a story earlier today that Rand Paul had been stripped of his license to practice medicine because of his dangerous and anti-science, anti-medicine blatherings about the vaccine and about masking. But I could not ascertain its truth. Has anybody in the Horn Family Community Congregation seen that story as well? Were you able to ascertain its veracity if you did see it? So, if you have, let me know. But anyway, first, says Joey, there's Rand Paul, in his words, proclaiming that the Nazi Nancy Pelosi will not dictate to the good, God-fearing, upstanding evangelical people of this country about being vaccinated. According to Paul, Nancy Pelosi will not arrest us, and they cannot arrest us all. Oh, that's not playing well with Jeffrey. Well, speaking of arrest, Paul, you pompous pontificating prick, I wonder how many of your idiot followers will end up in a state of cardiac arrest after a round of the COVID because they listen to you and the Maggot Nation manipulation team. Oh, and he's got Junior with him, and not sure what kind of an influence he's proving to be for Junior.
I'm just a baby giraffe, and my little mind is not fully developed yet, but unlike all of you pawpaws who are in a perpetual state of arrested development, my mind will be fully developed someday because I'm already fully vaccinated.
Well, that wasn't so bad. Good job, Junior.
So this prayer meeting Wednesday, yesterday, I couldn't help thinking of the cult leader Jim Jones from the Bay Area who took his flock down to Guyana. Jones didn't drink the Kool-Aid so he could live, but instructed his flock to take the drink so they would die. Now we have the Rand Pauls of the Republican world who have gotten the vaccine so they can live, but are telling their flock not to get the shot so they can die. This is all very confusing for a giraffe to understand.
Yeah, phooey on organized religion, whatever that is.
I don't think Rand Paul has had the vaccine. That was a photograph, I think, from like 5 or 6 years ago, of Rand Paul getting the hepatitis B vaccine. And it was,
he didn't really take.
The point is, he took that vaccine. What the hell's wrong with this one? And by the way, no, having had the coronavirus does not prevent you from getting it again. I mean, witness Lamar Jackson of the Baltimore Ravens, who has now had it twice and maybe contemplating getting it a third time. We talked about that. But anyway, Joey points out, I think Jim Jones was actually shot in the head by one of the faithful followers, and Rand Paul better hope his followers are not as faithful. So for all you maggot morons out there, like the one that called and asked Robin to whom he was speaking, people should realize that Donald Trump, his wife, and the majority of these Republicans, including Marjorie Taylor Greene, Jim Jordan, and Matt Gaetz, have all been vaccinated, so why don't you? By the way, Joey thinks the caller was trying to make fun of me and asking, "What are you?" No. Just like the ignorant moron at the local store that you encountered who was not asking your name, but was really sarcastically making fun of you and asking, "What are you?" The caller was not interested in your name, but just wanted to make fun of you for the fact that you've changed your identity.
Yes, Robin, you were speaking of camels Monday or Tuesday, and as a giraffe, I'm fond of the humpbacks, and so is a Cleveland Browns football player by the name of Austin Hooper. Here's some irony. On the front of the sports page today was a picture of Hooper riding a camel in Egypt by the pyramids. Hooper was teaching children in Egypt the English language during the off-season, as many underprivileged children in Egypt cannot speak the language. Yes, and apparently most of the maggots don't understand English either, or they would have been vaccinated by now. On this day in 1984, during the Olympics in Los Angeles, American runner Mary Decker was tripped by South African-born British competitor Zola Bod. Decker fell and hit the Well, you know what happened to her, and she couldn't finish the race. Ola Budd finished seventh after tripping Decker. This is just another case of a bad Bud causing somebody to go tripping. Weary little llama. In addition to the $50 challenge Ralph's has on the table, there's a $25 Bud Out challenge. Bud Out. And it continues into today. The theme for Thorn in the Side Thursday, while keeping in step with yesterday's Kool-Aid concept featuring the Spreadnecks, will be how to get these idiots vaccinated. Since they won't take the shot, maybe we can promote our new Spreadneck drink called MAGA Brand Patriot Juice. Yes, new and improved Patriot Juice, freedom-enhancing supplement, bigger, stronger, more patriot, with bonus protection against critical race theory and transgender athletes.
We won't tell them it's actually a vaccination that helps prevent COVID.
Oh, that little one's getting crafty. So these have been Joey's Journal for Thorn in the Side Thursday, with a look back to yesterday, with Giraffe trying to inject some sanity and the vaccine into Spreadneck Nation. Yeah. Wow. So there's a $10 inject a Spreadneck challenge. So there's a total of $35 in challenges, courtesy of Joey and Giraffe, plus $50 from Ralph's. So that's a chance to double your money on the next $85 that comes in. Thank you very, very kindly. And I'm looking. I hope people won't let that $85 doubling challenge go by. If we need it, let's see, 85. That's $170 of the 501 we need to raise to keep from having a four-digit community-made miracle on the morrow. Okay, thank you, Roger. Roger jumped on it and said sent me a link from Snopes. AMA revokes Rand Paul's ophthalmology license. Not true, according to Snopes. Thank you for that, Roger. I appreciate you jumping on that. By the way, I had a note from our pal Cynthia in the Bay Area, recently mashed, smashed, and squeezed. And I'm glad that went well, and I hope you got good results, Cynthia. But Cynthia sent this video along to me, and we're going to check it out, because Cynthia said, maybe I'm a bad person for it, but I totally agree with this guy. All these goddamned anti-vaxxers who won't let the medicine prevent COVID with masks and the vaccine should stick to their stupid Darwin Award-winning guns and not go to the hospital to get medical help to treat COVID either. I'm so angry at these people that I would deny them entry into the hospital if they can't show that they've been vaccinated or a good reason why not. And yelling, because HIPAA, is not a good reason. Of course, that goes against everything I believe in, but I'm at the end of my patience with these people. It is not about their fucking freedom, it is about their fucking lives. And that goes in line with another individual who wishes to remain anonymous. And sent a note earlier today. And just an observation. I'm really tired of the anti-vaxxers, maskers. These people are most often the same right-wingers who are hateful, self-centered right-wingers and dragging our country down. Now they're primarily responsible for our vaccination rate to be too low for achieving herd immunity and putting all of us at great risk. Their arrogance and ignorance is now the cause of all the infected children losing their lives. I know it sounds hateful, but it's time to cut them loose. I'm fine with them all passing away and leaving us a better society afterwards. Perhaps it's time to just sit back, take care of ourselves, and just let them go. Best wishes, anonymous friend, a member of the Horn Family Community Congregation, as well as a Molloy Truth Seeker. Thank you for that. And I understand that sentiment completely. I wish there was some way that we get, and it's a hell of a thing to wish, that we could just let them kill each other and wipe themselves out and not take any risk of our own. Unfortunately, it doesn't, you know, pandemics don't work that way. And by the way, I noticed after my filthy morning habit was over this morning, I noticed that Stephanie Ruhle covered the story about how many the story we looked at yesterday about the ability of Pfizer to block the infection entirely, you know, that 46% number. And she had an expert on who, and she said, how worried should we, anyone who had the Pfizer vaccine, be about this? And he said, and the doctor said, not at all, echoing some of the analysis that I put forward last evening. Yeah. So I guess, I still feel like a booster will be warranted at some point, and I think it's going to be sooner rather than later. So please don't, you know, please don't get all freaked out or anything. Lee in New York said, I think I misheard. Did Joey say Uber was riding a camel? No, not Uber. That was Austin Hooper. Hooper. Yeah. And we regret that's on me. I must have not enunciated it well enough. Give Joey and Giraffe one more cowbell for the excellent Wednesday Journal, says Billable Rick. Okay, done. So there we go, maybe. And yeah, Lee also confirming that the AMA didn't revoke Rand Paul's medical license. The AMA doesn't grant medical licenses. States do. That's why I kind of went, what? Maybe they drummed him out? I don't know. On an airplane years ago, Lee notes, my seat was in the no-smoking section. The next row was the smoking section. I didn't feel like I was in a no-smoking section. Well, if you were ahead of it, then... Oh, never mind. I mean, the plane's flying, so the smoke should be... Science is hard. It's very, very hard. Yeah. Thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs also found nothing. Turns out, yeah, Snopes... Snopes nailed it. Yeah, where's that? Let's see what the explanation is on that. Basically, it's no. The American Medical Association revoked the ophthalmology license of Senator Rand Paul, a Republican from Kentucky, due to ethical concerns and his blatant disregard for the Hippocratic Oath. See, that's what made my little pink little ears perk up, because that just doesn't happen. It showed up over on Pathos. It was actually from the satire blog on Pathos, Laughing in Disbelief. Yeah. Okay. So there was no action whatsoever. And I know it's kind of sad, but... Hopefully he's too busy to practice medicine. Down in Texas, Stan, by the way, the state government there, and by that I mean Greg Abbott, some establishments, restaurants, have said, you know, we're going to require proof of vaccination to allow people in the door. Well, the bioterrorist Greg Abbott, who basically apparently rules by fiat down there, according to the Austin American-Statesman, two Austin restaurants, Launderette and Frazes, were contacted by the Texas Alcoholic Beverage Commission, who said that requiring proof of vaccination would violate the statute passed by the Texas legislature earlier this year. And in that legislation, a vaccine passport, which is the term these idiots are now using, proof of vaccination requirement would, in violating that law, would put their liquor licenses in jeopardy. Yeah. Yesterday, we received a courtesy call from the TABC saying that we must immediately act in compliance with the law and that if we did not, a case would be opened and we would be at threat of losing our state licenses. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Greg Abbott wants Texans. I mean, it just is what it is. Greg Abbott wants Texans to, effing die. And going back to the tennis stand story, Mama said, while I disagree with the dress code policy, I'm not really into this to fight that policy. My goal is to draw attention to the importance of mask usage in our schools. We need to base decisions around this issue on medical data and be guided by the recommendations of experts in this area. But I'm up for fighting the dress code once we get the mask issue taken care of. And dress codes are stupid because it puts the burden on girls, school girls, to be responsible for the impulses and behaviors of boys. And it's in line, it's the same motivation that goes hand in hand with, say, making women wear beekeeper suits because horny boys can't keep their dicks under control if they see get a glimpse of bare female ankle. Or, women have to hide their hair under scarves lest their husbands catch a wisp of curl and immediately are thrown into paroxysms of sexual frenzy and can't apply appropriate studiousness to their holy books. Jesus God! Kudos to that brilliant mom in Tennessee. But now back to the audio that Cynthia sent along from Jason Arena. Let's check this out. Nope, wrong button. Works better this way.
This whole COVID, not getting vaccinated and running to the fucking hospital once you get the virus fucking deal. Because this shit is out of fucking control, all right? And I'm going to give you a quick story on why I think it's out of fucking control. Last week, I had to bring my wife into the hospital. She has stage 4 breast cancer. She was dealing with some symptoms, and I had to bring her in to get some fluid drained. She was having some pain, blah, blah, blah. She was in there for 2 days. On the third day, she honestly should have stayed one more day, maybe 2 more days, okay? But on the third day, instead of draining her fluid and what they wanted to do, they told us that she had to be discharged because they had no room left in the hospital because of COVID. Here's my question. Why 99% of everybody that's in the hospital with COVID right now is unvaccinated, okay? If you really fucking believe that COVID's not real, and you really believe that's not a big deal, and you really believe that you don't need to get the vaccine, that is your fucking right, okay? I'm not going to argue with you about that. What I am going to argue with about is you running to the fucking hospital once you get the virus. If you don't trust the medical field to prevent you from getting it, why do you trust them to cure you from it? Why do you run to the fucking hospital? If you really believe that COVID's not a big deal and it's not this, that, the other, and you don't get the vaccine because of, stick to your fucking guns and keep your motherfucking ass at home. Stop running to the hospital, putting everybody else at fucking risk, and in turn, the collateral damages. People like my wife, who actually need medical fucking help for a chronic fucking disease, get kicked out of the hospital because your dumb ass is too stupid to go get a fucking vaccine shot. Keep your ass at home. If you really believe COVID's not a big deal, prove it. Stick to your fucking guns. Keep your ass at home and fucking deal with it.
Kind of hard to argue with his reasoning, isn't it? Of course, hospitals will not turn away people. And no matter how badly he may have wanted it, you know, Ron Paul back in 2012, they're not just going, well, no, that's the thing. Because of these goddamn COVIDiots and mask holes and spread necks, people will die in the hallways. Remember how, remember the mass graves in New York City? As the pandemic ravaged Gotham in 2020? Because I do. Yeah. Thank you very kindly to Charlene in Rogues Island. Thank you so very much, Charlene. Charlene has met the $25 portion of Joey and Giraffe's challenge. That leaves $10 more of their challenge, and then $50 from Ralph's, and that'll knock out $170 of the deficit. Like I said, if we could raise $501 this evening, and we are on the way now, it would be fantastic for tomorrow. Thank you. That was North Carolina excavator Jason Arena. And as Flavio notes, he gave anti-vaxxers a piece of his mind on TikTok, basically telling them to not come to the hospitals when they come down with COVID-19 and stick to their guns. What a horror. And at this point in time, how is this not intentional conduct on the part of the mask holes? I'm sort of at a loss to understand it any other way. An excellent journal, a note coming in. That was an excellent journal, but it does leave me with a question. How did Junior enjoy his first baseball game? And the clinic that Christine is going to be going to in Illinois, in Hines, Illinois, is a 34-bed inpatient rehab facility for blind adults. She's the first veteran from the Robert Bush VA Medical Center here in Indianapolis to go there. She's made an appointment with an eye doctor to get a full eye exam and to see what she can do to strengthen her vision. That's from our buddy, Dave in the Blind. Thank you, Dave. And again, please pass our best wishes along to Christine. We really are all rooting for her here. Well, maybe you think it might be time for a little insider trading investigation of Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, on Twitter. Rand Paul discloses 16 months late that his wife bought stock in Gilead, which makes COVID treatment, Remdesivir. And Remdesivir sales have soared to $829 million. Now we know why he's so against masks and vaccines, Lindy Lee writes. The only senator who opposed the emergency COVID bill. Death for dollar bills. Mm-hmm. It's better for Rand Paul and Mrs. Libertarian ophthalmologist if people get sick and have to have Remdesivir. Yeah. And Lindy Lee went on to tweet, thank you, David, in South Carolina, Stan, for these. Suspicious that Ron DeSantis is suddenly pushing Regeneron so hard. It costs $1,500 a dose, while vaccines are free. The company has a history of kickbacks. Is this another case of insider trading? He had a call with Regeneron's CEO last week. Any campaign donations involved? Jesus, they're all just so freaking sleazy. Hey, thank you to Christopher. Christopher just got us started on Ralph's challenge. There's $25 more to go on that, and then $10 of Joey and Giraffe's. So thank you, Christopher. Thank you so very much for jumping in on that. Meeting some challenges, says Christopher. Thank you. That's fantastic. Is Joe Manchin a closet Klansman? Ron in Raleigh says, this obstructionist has got to go. Doesn't he recognize that critical race theory isn't fucking being taught in kindergarten or elementary or high school? What's wrong with a swath of the West Virginia population that keeps electing this self-serving asshole to high office? Well, nobody's ever going to accuse Joe Manchin of being a member of Mensa. He is, however, very good at politicking. And that's an entirely separate skill set. But the question as to what's wrong with a swath of the West Virginia population that keeps electing him is the competition he keeps getting. because the Republican Party, the Republican Party as it is presently constituted, whatever they put up is always going to be manifestly worse than Joe Manchin. And that's who the Republicans are now. I mean, I guess you could say, where's the loyal Democrat challenger in the primary? But because he runs a cult of personality, no politician with any kind of a future in this state wants to get on the wrong side of him, because they will be on the on his shit list forevermore. And that leaves people to challenge him in primaries who really lack political talent or political skill, and particularly access to the necessary dollars to beat him. Let's see, when he got primaried in, 2018, it was an amateur politician who was backed by the Justice Democrats, who took money and gave minimal assistance to the candidate, and most of it left the state to support other candidacies. So I mean, that's kind of in a nutshell, Ron. I hope it helps. I mean, look, I'll say it again. The best way to render Joe Manchin irrelevant is to elect people who will fill Republican seats in other states. Charles Booker in Kentucky. Whoever the Democratic nominee is in North Carolina. Whoever the Democratic nominee is. Maybe Tim Ryan in Ohio. I said that right, didn't I? Ohio. There's an open seat in Alabama. I keep saying it. It could happen. It did happen in 2017. And Doug Jones. Maybe he'll come back and run for Richard Shelby's open seat. Jimmy in the Great Northwest says the non-maskers are members of the Suicide Squad, showing at a Walmart near you. Mm-hmm. Billable Rick with a note: Giraffe and Junior at the Field of Dreams game. I hope that Joey's gotten tickets for Giraffe and Junior to attend the Field of Dreams game this evening in Dyersville, Iowa, between the White Sox and the Yankees. The Giraffe family would really enjoy the game, as they're tall enough to see over the corn stalks and center field. Wait a minute. Okay. That was quality. Well done. Well done, Bill. By the way, Ron and Raleigh sent me a note. Says, sometimes good things do happen. There's some information out in the first photo of the spinoff series from Bosch, the Amazon Prime series. It's going to air on IMDb, the spinoff is. Looking forward to that, because that was really well made. And a location shooting in L.A., Tracy was telling me that, they did a really good job with the location shooting. Another thing I saw, and just kind of out of the blue, and I got real excited, I think by maybe 2022, I'm not sure, Amazon Prime is going to drop, and I hope they do it right. It's a series, not a movie, but a Lord of the Rings series. And I know there's a lot of Lord of the Rings fans in the Horn Family Community Congregation. I'm really looking forward to this. Because it's not, they're not just doing the trilogy again. That would be kind of silly. No, they're doing the Second Age. The things that happen in the Fellowship of the Ring, the Two Towers, and the Return of the King. That's all the Third Age of Middle Earth. But the Second Age leads up to that climactic battle with Sauron, when he still had a physical body, that ends when his armies are defeated by the great coalition of elves and dwarves and men and whatnot, and Isildur cuts the finger off of Sauron's hand with the ring on it and sets in motion the whole chain of events that leads to Bilbo finally finding it, where Gollum had dropped it down in the caves during his adventure on the way to the Lonely Mountain with the dwarves. And they released a single screenshot or a single photo that shows what I presume to be Minas Tirith with a lone individual, cloaked individual, standing and looking at the multi-tiered city against the mountain. Looks really beautiful. And I hope they get it right, and I think it drops in like 2022. Dress codes. Steve in New York says, I'm going to strongly disagree with you. In some instances in co-ed schools, all the girls wear the same thing and all the boys all wear the same thing. This makes sure that poorer kids don't feel shame because they can't afford the more expensive clothing more affluent kids can afford. In fact, a very good friend of mine attended an all-boys Jesuit school in New York City called Regis. For any boy whose grades met the school's standards, the boy went there at no cost. They all wore the same thing because it took the name brand versus no name brand mini class war out of the equation. That wasn't what this mom in Tennessee was talking about. She was talking about a dress code that is aimed specifically at girls and young women. No camis with a spaghetti strap, no bare shoulders, no rips in jeans higher up than fingertip length, no leggings, no tights that don't have a skirt over them. Sexist garbage. And the class war aspect. But that just means that parents have to go out and buy uniforms. So there's still, it still puts a burden on less pecunious parents. Got it, says Steve. I sit corrected. I got that. Megan, so the Lord of the Rings Amazon series is equivalent to Star Wars movies 1, 2, and 3. By the way, that individual standing in the image is surmised to be Lady Galadriel. I didn't know that. Well, yeah, kind of. It's a prequel, I guess, but it wouldn't be 1, 2, and 3. It would be more like 4, 5, and 6, because 1, 2, and 3 would be the stuff that's in the Silmarillion. That's the first age, when the presence of evil was Morgoth. And you get, Gondolin and Beren and Luthien and all of that stuff. Hey, thank you, Frank. Frank just finished off Ralph's LOL Mike Mr. Meth Pillow Lindell challenge. Thank you, Frank. And so that leaves $10 in a challenge from Joey and Giraffe. And that gets us down to, that'll get the fundraising goal down to $1,020. Thank you, Frank. It's a long way to go, but we're getting there. Thank you so very much. And now, let's check out Coach. Yes, I am. Steve says, I'm impressed. You really are a Lord of the Rings nerd. Very much so. Oh, golly. When I was a kid, my walls were decorated with Lord of the Rings posters. The art done by what were their names? Greg and Tim Hildebrand. And a big blow up of Tolkien's own map of Middle Earth. That's the one thing I keep wishing. I love speaking of trilogies, I love the Takeshi Kovacs trilogy by Richard K. Morgan. And the one thing it lacks, especially in the third book, but also in the second, you don't really need it for the first, but in the second book and the third book, we need maps, because the places are located on planets that we don't know. And there's something about me that wishes I could visualize, especially Harlan's world in the third book. Sounds like it's a planet that's like 9/10 water, with island groups and mini continents and archipelagos and stuff. That would be really, really cool. This story would have been great for either Morian Monday or Titanic Tuesday, but it's thorny, too. Senator Tommy the Tuber had a stunt blow up in his face in the Senate as the Senate debated legislation. He put forward a bad, anything Tommy the Tuber does is in bad faith. I mean, remember, this is a guy who got busted for insider trading as part of a hedge fund scam. What it had to do with was an amendment that Tommy the Tuber introduced and Cory Booker mocked mercilessly. Tommy the Tuber wanted to paint Democrats as anti-police. A non-binding amendment to punish localities who defund the police. And since it's non-binding, it has no penalties, it has no teeth, it has no force, it has no effect. And Cory Booker, in the course of the discussion, had great merriment with it. And he said, "I'm so excited. This is the highlight of this long and painful night. This is a gift. If it wasn't a complete abdication of Senate procedures and esteem, I would walk over there and hug my colleague from Alabama. And I will tell you right now, thank God, because there are some people that said that there are members of this political body that want to defund the police. My horror. And now this senator is giving us the gift of finally, once and for all, to put to bed this scurrilous accusation that somebody in this esteemed body would want to defund the police. So let's all of us, 100 people, not walk, but sashay down there." Ooh, sashaying. I sashay a little bit these days. "And vote for this amendment and put to rest the lies. I'm sure I will see no political ads attacking anybody here over defund the police." And so it was 99-0. The amendment passed. Because Tommy the Tuber is a boober. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to legislative stupidity, you really can't beat the past master of maggot stupidity. And that would be representing Louis Gohmert. Louis Asparagus Gohmert. Of the 1st Congressional District of Texas. Every time I see a Louis Asparagus Gohmert story, I think about how I would like to go down to the 1st District of Texas and just kind of do some people watching. Maybe ask, hey, are you by chance a Louis Asparagus Gohmert voter?
"Why, yes, I am.
Would you mind would you demonstrate the fine art of shoelace tying for me? Or could maybe you do some ciphering, like what is 1 and 1 and 2 and 2?
"Well, 1 and 1 equals Jesus, and Jesus is 3, and it's a holy trinity. Well, I don't wear shoes what's got shoestrings to them. See down here, they're slip-ons."
Mm-hmm. Right. So Louis Asparagus Gohmert did an interview because somebody there picked up the phone and they said, "Hey, get Louis on the blower. It's a slow news day. It's August, damn it." So over at ONAN, the network that spills its news upon the ground, they did, in fact, get Louis Asparagus Gohmert on the blower, and he gave him an interview about the Senate infrastructure bill, the bipartisan, I should add, Senate infrastructure bill, and all the damage that was going to come from it. What do you suppose? I mean, because like over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda, they've got people who work there who are decidedly not right-wing tools. But Fox pays pretty well, and so you take the job that pays the money. And they just kind of sit back and, well, now, you got to think it's kind of the, you hope it's kind of the same way at Onan. And so the people off, you know, off screen are going, what? Oh, hey, Marge, come over here. Louie's on. And this is just one of those great moments in Gohmert. Get the hockey puck. Otherwise, the giggling and the laughing and the shrieking will bother the neighbors.
But some of the crazy things in it. Let's plant flowers on the side of the road. Let's study impact.
Oh, wait. That audio is just way too low. Let's go to a different playback, because I don't want to. Aerosmith once sang, I don't want to miss a thing. No, because this is just too damn good. And I guess just from the sound of her voice, it sounds like this is Onan's answer to what's her name? White Power Barbie. Tommy Lauren. By the way, who dyed her hair? By the way. You know, she used to be this bleach blonde, you know, Aryan little slip, and now it's just sort of a latte caramel kind of not red, not brown, you know, whatever. Maybe she's trying to shed the whole white power Barbie image. So the attack blonde at Onan is decrying the Green New Deal, which, by the way, is not in the bipartisan infrastructure bill. It's just not. But that doesn't stop Onan from spreading the horse shit that it is and engaging Louis Asparagus Gohmert, the chief manure spreader, I guess.
Bill, but some of the crazy things in it. Let's plant flowers on the side of the road. Let's study impact collisions between animals and humans on the road. What about the windmills? The windmills kill so many birds, and yet they're taking us toward the Green New Deal.
Yeah, well, and another part of that Green Deal is the huge solar farm that they have out on the border of California and Nevada. Thousands of acres of concave mirrors that magnify.
And they're farming the solars. Again, oh my God. Sparky, get her. Windmills. Did you get that? Windmills. Yeah, there's a solar farm. And, oh my God. The horror. Yeah. Take it away. I'm sorry, Louie. I didn't mean to interrupt.
Farm that they have out on the border of California and Nevada. Thousands of acres of concave mirrors that magnify the sun toward three towers, heat up the liquid in there and turn turbines.
Is it liquid or is that one of those salt furnaces? I don't know. But you know, it's part of the Green Deal. I wonder if Marjorie Trader Gangrene Cucumber knows about the Green Deal. Since she's green. Not that kind of green.
But they weren't anticipating.
Wait, before we find out what they weren't anticipating, you need to know what the font is for this madness. Stopping the Left's Communist Pipe Dreams, The Real Story. With Natalie Harp. Yes, the attack blonde is Natalie Harp. E. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
That there would be hundreds and thousands of what they would call flamers, because when the birds fly through, if they survive the windmills, then they hit that magnified sun, explode in flame, and down they go, bird guts all over the mirror. So that takes some cleaning up. This is the green stuff that's just out of control and is going to bring the nation down.
Yeah, the green stuff is out of control. It's going to bring the nation down. Because of a desperate attempt to stop burning fossil fuels so human beings can continue to live on the planet as, you know, a species. Bird guts all over the place. Well, I don't know about you, but there went dinner in the Eastern and Central Daylight Time Zones. Bird guts. I guess that would include bird livers. Little teeny tiny... these things, and they call them flamers. Yeah, they're flamers. Yeah, sure. Wonder who calls them flamers. Because this is the first I'm hearing of the flamers. And I kind of keep up with this stuff. But, yeah. Poof! And just burst into flame, flying through the... I guess they don't have the sense to not fly into the light beam. What? Well, they are bird brains, after all. Lee in New York, windmills. Of course we have to get rid of windmills. Windmills kill birds by the millions. The former guy told us so. Let's just build wind turbines. We'll let the birds hunt for windmills to fly into. No. Cats kill more birds every year than wind turbines, than all wind turbines combined. Yeah. Jesus. Oh, the stupid. It hurts as us. But I had an object lesson in how deadly cats can be. You know, we've got a couple of outside cats now, and they do a little hunting. It's in their nature. We feed them very, very well in hopes that they won't, but they have. And they left one by the studio door. That's where they leave them now, and I missed one. And I was walking through the yard yesterday, and day before, and I had a pair of sandals on, and I heard something go pop under my foot. And so I have a certain degree of sympathy with Fluy asparagus gomert, because there were bird guts everywhere, and they were not fresh bird guts. They were, let us say, aged bird guts, and my olfactory sense was immediately assaulted by the smell of, well, never mind. Probably shouldn't have brought that up in the first place. So I guess, I don't know, maybe we need to get Louis Asparagus Gomert on the blower and talk about the dangers of kitty cats. Or, I don't know, suspiciously large women wearing sandals. Stich. Blech. Ugh. Ah. Nasty. Ugh. Yeah, birds exploding from a solar farm. What the fuck? I know, Ralphs. I know. Lee should get a cowbell for his birds hunting for windmills as opposed to wind turbine. Okay, thank you. Yeah, Billable Rick is kind of becoming the Department of Cowbell here. Thank you. Oh, well played. Well played, Randy Radar. Fricasseed chickadee. Yes. Yeah, Ralphs, I really did. Oh, it was vile. It was awful. We've got an outside, it's a laundry sink, but it's an outside sink for when I'm cooking outside. Somehow there's too many outsides in there. But I immediately went over, and it's really neat. The faucet, the end of the faucet actually pulls out and has an extended hose on it. And I turned the hot water on for all it was worth, and was, oh, yeah, I hosed down both foot and sandal. Oh, it was gross. God, it was gross. I think that was the grossest thing I'd seen since, well, no, I probably better not bring that story up. Let's just say it involves an inside-out groundhog. Processed. Wasn't pretty. There's Megan. Well, I was going to have chicken for dinner, but chicken with basil pesto no longer sounds appetizing. I know. I'm sorry. That one's on me. I apologize, Megan. Yeah, my bad. Fricasseed chickadee is pretty damn good, though, you got to admit. Chris and Christopher in Portland says, poor Louie, it just ain't easy being green. Just ask Kermit. There it is, the 2024 Republican ticket, Louie and Kermie. And it, campaign slogan, watch your ass for the concave mirror things. Yeah. Meanwhile, having recently viewed for the first time Idiocracy, Steve in New York says, Gohmert, brought to you by Carl's Jr. Precisely. That's why, and you know, that's why Idiocracy is a, it's not a comedy. It's more like an allegory and by way of prophecy. Mm-hmm. So we got $10 more in matching money on the table, and like I said, that would get us down to $10.20 for fundraising, which would be wonderful. And in the meantime, let's take a bit of a break and go to the Green News Report, and then we'll come back and, I don't know, maybe go to the phones, perhaps, you think? Yeah. Anyway, hopefully Brad and Desi have something that's at least the equal to Louis Asparagus Gohmert.
It's Thursday, August 12, 2021.
It is a massive investment, $3.5 trillion to be spent on American families and to combat the climate crisis.
Democrats pass budget reconciliation blueprint, setting the stage for historic climate action. Wildfire smoke reaches North Pole for the first time ever. Plus, Tropical Depression Fred heads to Florida as the rest of the globe swelters.
All of that sweltering and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
If Joe Biden really wants $66 billion for trains, he should change Amtrak's name to Track Force.
True that. This is your Green News Report.
Now sign the check, Mitch. Freedom isn't free.
Okay, Desi Doyen, potentially very big news in the U.S. Congress, but of course, extreme weather gets in the way already.
Oh, always it does. First, as we go to air, Tropical Depression Fred is tracking toward Florida, while much of the U.S. is roasting under another extreme heat wave, prompting excessive heat warnings or advisories covering more than 150 million people. In Oregon, Governor Kate Brown has declared a heat emergency just weeks after a deadly heat wave struck the Pacific Northwest. In Europe, still in the grip of a persistent, widespread heat wave fueling record wildfires, the island of Sicily this week, if confirmed, may have set a new all-time highest temperature record for the entire continent of at least 120 degrees Fahrenheit.
In Sicily.
Tunisia on Wednesday also set a new all-time national record of 122 degrees Fahrenheit.
In Tunisia.
In Siberia, also in the grip of an intense heat wave, massive wildfires in that one single region are now bigger than all of the world's other fires combined.
Well done, Siberia.
Worse, smoke from those fires has reached the North Pole for the first time in recorded history, according to satellite observations. Black soot from the wildfires, sadly, settles on Arctic ice, absorbing the sun's heat, which accelerates the melting of the ice.
Santa is not going to like that at all.
Now, a new dire UN climate report issued this week warns that global warming and extreme weather disasters will worsen and intensify over the next 20 to 30 years, and that the window is closing for world governments to enact swift changes to have a decent chance of staving off truly catastrophic impacts projected for the latter half of this century. To that end,
after years and years of infrastructure week, we're in the cusp of an infrastructure decade.
After months of negotiations, Senate Democrats this week passed two major bills. First was the $1.2 trillion bipartisan infrastructure deal, which focuses on repairing the nation's crumbling infrastructure, with 19 Republicans voting in favor. If it's passed by the House, this modest bill would be the biggest investment in traditional infrastructure since the interstate highway system decades ago.
And in electric vehicle charging stations, just want to point that out.
Oh, indeed. President Biden emphasized its historic nature.
This bill is going to help make a historic recovery a long-term boom.
Senate Democrats also this week pushed through a key procedural vote on a budget resolution strictly along party lines that lays the groundwork for the Democrats' only $3.5 trillion budget reconciliation package, funding over 10 years that boosts working families and so-called human infrastructure. The blueprint also contains the bulk of Biden's climate agenda, targeting 100% clean electricity by 2035 and net zero carbon emissions economy-wide by 2050.
Cool.
It has significant investments to speed the transition away from fossil fuels, cut pollution and emissions, and funds repairs and upgrades to adapt the nation's infrastructure for climate resilience. In its present form, it establishes a clean electricity standard, a civilian climate corps jobs program, investments in environmental justice, electrifying buildings, expanding electric vehicles, renewable energy, and more. Final passage in the laborious legislative process would likely come in mid-September with zero Republican votes expected.
But it does appear to be coming as long as, well, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema decide to play along.
The two bills together would be the biggest infrastructure investment in U.S. history and are widely seen as the last chance for the U.S. to take meaningful climate action for the next decade if Republicans retake Congress in the 2022 midterm elections. In a recent interview on the broadcast, climate scientist Dr. Michael Mann referred to the dire new UN climate report released this week in noting just how crucial it is that the U.S. take action.
Potential for climate policy stands on a knife edge. This is the defining challenge of our time. Catastrophic climate change is here. The science tells us that we have to act now. This is a defining moment in human civilization.
And I don't think that's an overstatement. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find, follow, and share us planet-wide on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh, those clever bumpers, Brad and Desi, constantly put out there for us. Thank you. Let's see. I'm going right to the phones in a second. But Ron and Raleigh asks, how come I've been scouring the Dutch news sites for news of bird homicide by windmill and couldn't find a single report. The sabot-wearing, dyke-plugging Dutch are hiding this very critical information. Oh, I know. It's a nefarious plot. I checked in with Q. Stop it, Robin. Everyone knows the sentence that starts, "That's the grossest thing since," never ends well. Oh, I know. I'm sorry. I really, really am. Oh, that's gross. Thank you, Jimmy. We went from fricasseed chickadee to pigeon a la foot. Ugh. That's just awful. Hey, you know what? I've got someone on the line here over on the stress line. Our dear, dear, dear friend of long standing, Juanita. Hey, Juanita, how are you, dear?
I was laughing at your government. You gave me a little big laugh. imitating Gomer. That's his name, but that guy is something else. I don't like to call people stupid, but that guy is stupid.
he's a bona fide moron, Juanita, no doubt about it.
I think that's an insult to morons. Did you see? I think it was when blonde and the chiseled guy from Florida tried to go to see the Patriots that were mistreated in jail, and nobody would let them in. And Gomer was with them.
Oh yeah,
and then they started running.
Matt Gaetz and Gomer.
And they started speaking, and they started running.
Yeah, because they was about to wind up in the jail, not at the jail.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they go to see the mistreated patriots, you know. But, those people would not let them in. But it was funny.
Oh, it was a pathetic publicity stunt.
Well, there's so many of them, and they're so dangerous. You know, it's not that they're all dangerous.
Oh, they're awful.
Even he is, yeah. I mean, there's so many. I'm hoping that, I can't say her first name, Dennings. I'm hoping she'll beat...
Val?
Yeah, Val Dennings. I hope she'll beat... I hope we'll get her first, our senator. Because we've got him, and we've got Skinhead, Scott.
Yeah, Skeletor, yeah.
The one that stole billions of dollars from Medicare.
And naturally was sent by the people of the state of Florida to the Senate for his trouble.
Well, you know, I think there's a little bit shady stuff going on about that.
Oh, I have no doubt.
Yeah. But, and then we've got the lovely, what's his name, our governor?
Oh, DeSantis?
Whatever. He's, I'll tell you, some people were calling him like, looked like a little child, but to me, he looks like a cute close clan.
Well, you know, every time I mention him, I talk Juanita about the fact that he really was elected with the help of Nazis.
Of course. Well, they're all, they're all Nazis, you know, let's face it. But they don't know what the difference between Nazis and communists and all that kind of stuff. They don't, well, they pretend they don't know the difference.
Right. Pretend.
But, remember that Hitler treated the Nazis, the communists pretty bad. He did not like them. So.
Exactly.
But I'm kind of disturbed about some of the news reports because they're constantly saying, oh, Trump's in trouble. Trump's in trouble. Well, no, not yet. And then they'll say, well, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that. You know, it's got to be all this proof and everything. I just wish that they wouldn't say that until it does happen, if it does. What do you think?
Well, I think journalism's having a really hard time trying to get the right kind of information out there. I mean, you're in Florida, Juanita. What are you doing to stay safe, dear?
I'm doing a lot of praying. We got a hurricane coming again.
Oh, golly.
You know
Moses.
About that, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's got, I don't know, we're pretty lucky, you know, the last one, it was supposed to come and hit us direct, and it kind of fizzled out and went a different pathway, which that's the way hurricanes do. You know, they'll flip and flop and everything else sometime. So I'm hoping it's not going to be that bad. But I feel sorry for those islands down there that
get hit
so often, you know, including Cuba, you know. But anyway, nobody cares about nobody but yourself anymore, it doesn't seem. You know, there's so many people that are, their voices are heard. Our voices are not. But I think there's a little bit, but I did want to say something about your lovely senator.
Oh, do please. Yeah, do please.
You know what I remember about when I first started listening to your show? You know, about the he was governor.
Mm-hmm.
And the people that have started that business, you know, the windmill business.
Mm-hmm.
Remembers it, and they tried to talk to him, and he was just completely uninterested.
Sure, because he's a coal broker.
But the thing is that a lot of people say, "Oh, he really believes what he's saying." Well, I don't. I think he's definitely. I tell you, he reminds me of Lieberman. Remember how Lieberman?
Oh my God! Wait a minute, Juanita. That's a cowbell. Joe Manchin is the hillbilly Lieberman.
Yeah. Remember how he did it, and he didn't try to fight for Florida to count all the votes. Of course, it was in the bag, you know, that they weren't going to be counted. But anyway, he could have at least stood up. And then he went completely for, like, McCain and all like that.
Oh, yeah.
And he campaigned one time for president, and he said there should be Medicare for all. And then when it came time to vote for the so-called, President Obama bill, when it came time, they brought it up, and he said, no, I'll vote against it, you know. He just jumped from one thing to the other.
Oh, I know. He's horrible.
But anyway, I've tried to go through probate for my son's, what my son has left. It wasn't stolen. And I had a judge that was appointed by a skinhead. And he kind of gave me a hard time, but decision. And they put the... instead of putting my son's name on it, they put a man who just died in January. And so now that's all got to be changed, and that's been way over a week ago. But it hasn't been changed, because I can't do anything with this until they've got the right name on here.
Right.
Yeah.
What a bunch of screw-ups.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, as far as going through the fire and losing my son, it seems like that every time I think I'm getting somewhere, something else turns up. It's like, I didn't know that if your house is burned down and it's been condemned and you can't live in it, that if you don't have it torn down, you still got to pay the taxes that you would if you were able to live in it. I couldn't believe it. It's just different things like that.
Oh, you have been through so much, Juanita.
Well, I haven't been through what a lot of people been through, but it's been rough. But I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot about the law that I didn't know before, and I've been ripped off by a home that I was in for a while. But I got away from that. I'm in my own apartment now. And that was not easy to get, believe me. It's just down here, they hardly have anything for people, you know, like senior citizens and people who don't have a lot of money. They have to end up going to these homes where they take away everything you've got. And then give you $54 out of your Medicare. So I didn't get that far, see. I buckled, you know, I fought. And I had to pay for that, too. But they took my COVID money and said it wasn't mine. And they still got it. So there's a lot of things need to be changed, and I'm hopeful. But I wish the Democrats would hurry up and not, I don't know, dilly-dally around.
I hope you're able to get as close to being back to whatever normal is as possible, Juanita. I do. They have run you from pillar to post.
Oh well, yeah. But I fought the law, and the law won, I guess. I don't know. But anyway, well, I guess I'll let you go.
Well, I'm so glad you called. It's so good to hear from you.
And
sometime I'd like to figure out what this mumbo jumbo stuff is on this. Sometime if I could send you a copy of, see if you can explain it to me how I can get this property in my name. It's got a lot of mumbo jumbo on it.
Well, send it to me. Send it to me, and I'll look at it. I mean, I'm certainly not. I'm not a lawyer, and I don't practice in Florida. But But you know, some of it's just, you know, basic. But yeah.
Who did you say was a lawyer that's also a senator? Where you were talking before.
A bunch of them are. I mean. Oh, golly. Let's see. Is it Richard Blumenthal? I think, yeah.
It's somebody you were talking about while I was online. And I didn't know they were also a lawyer. I don't know if it was the good one or the good folks or the bad folks or.
I'm not sure. Yeah.
But I truly feel like our country's on the precipice. You know what I'm saying? Because he could have, and he probably will still try to take over, just like he did.
Oh, there are still, I mean, you know, there are still people out there.
Very
well. He's coming back to office. He's still the president.
And I wonder what they think he's going to do for them. I mean, he's going to let them die or whatever, and then they can get all the people from foreign countries that need help and come over here and be their slaves. That's what it is. Think about it.
Yeah.
And we'll be no telling what happened to us, because we're just terrible people, you know.
Exactly, Juanita. Well, dear, you take care of yourself. I mean, you live in a state where that damn disease is running wild, and they, you know, your governor wants it to run wild.
Sometime I have to tell you about my experience of going to the emergency room about a week and a half ago.
Oh, that must have been terrifying.
They were just full of COVID. It was not a good experience, and we have a really good emergency room here, but they were so overloaded, you wouldn't believe it.
Well, I just got a note from our mutual dear friend, Jude.
Hi, Jude.
And she says, what a wonderful lady my dear friend is. One of the gifts in meeting her through the horn. Because Jude just loves you to pieces.
Well, just same to her. It's been a blessing.
And you
take care of yourself.
I'm doing my very best. And you do the same. Stay safe. Try not to let one of them idiots spread the disease to you.
No. Okay. All right. Bye-bye.
Bye, Juanita. Our dear, dear friend Juanita. She has been through so very much, and won't quit. Doesn't have a lick of give up in her. Darlene with a note says Juanita has raised a salient point. A journalistic gauntlet has arisen around someone or some entity somewhere ready to indict and arrest Trump. It's taken on a life of its own. It puts eyeballs on the pages and screens and still gets us nowhere. Bastard should have been indicted and arrested long ago, and the fact he hasn't is concerning and frightening in and of itself. What the fuck does it actually take? In fact, I saw kind of an overview earlier today of the various and sundry cases swirling around Trump and his filthy little family, and nothing. Yeah, it feels like nothing's happening. And I know the law is slow grinding, but damn, how slow must it be? And by the way, while it is true that story about Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, was not true. The Minneapolis Star Tribune has the story of a physician from Eden Prairie, Minnesota, and the state medical board there in Minnesota, you know, and like I said earlier, it's state's licensed doctors. Well, the Minnesota State Medical Board has gone after a Minnesota physician by the name of Dr. Robert Zajac for unethical or improper conduct because of his spread of false or misleading information to patients about COVID-19, and among other things, telling parents not to have their children vaccinated. The newspaper story says the board received four complaints against Zajac dating to 2017, some filed by other physicians. Some of the complaints alleged that he was not following evidence-based medicine and that he was actively encouraging parents not to vaccinate their children. And Zajac went so far as to try to get a federal court to make the licensing board stop investigating because he claimed his free speech was being violated. And the court was having nothing of it. And then finally, settling with the medical board, he agreed that he'd pay a fine of $10,000 and have to go and take courses on medical ethics, communicable diseases, professional boundaries, and patient communication. Jesus. And, of course, he's right in line with the maggots and the Republicans. And, you know, the fee dummies. Ooh, is that a new one? Fee dummies? Yeah. Well, good for the Minnesota Medical Board. Too bad they stopped at just fining and sanctioning. Right? Yeah. And let's run over to the stress line and check in with Darlene. Hey, Darlene.
Hey, how you doing, Robin?
Hi, you know.
That was my question. Go ahead.
It's finally been kind of nice here. It got really good and warm today, which was... But today, you're right, the days are getting shorter.
Yeah, and it was really... it's brutal here in Connecticut, where I guess real feel was 105 degrees. I live... in the mountains, you know, our elevation is over 1,500 feet. So as long as I have fans running, I'm fairly good. We have a good evening here. I may have to cut out unexpectedly because we have rumblings and storm clouds rolling past, but it's not amounting to anything at this point.
But, does your internet run hide under the bed too?
Pretty much, yeah. Oh, yes. And when it rains in particular, the internet is quirky, and you know, it's like frying pan into the fire kind of thing, because you know, we both bitched about from here, but you know, Optimum is even worse, so I'm basically stuck with Frontier. It's like whoever can get me, whenever we have a storm and the modem blows, it's like whoever can get me a modem fast wins, and it's been Frontier. Believe it or not, they're better at that than Optimum, because, you know, it's a fucking monopoly. So, you know, you have very few choices in the area. But maybe Biden's plan, you know, will help alleviate that. And I thought I had been on the air when I first called in, but I was asking, you know, is it salient or salient? Juanita, I was trying to call in, I think, when Juanita had called in. And she's a worthy opponent, so I'm kind of glad she got in before me, because you don't hear from her very often. And I just want to say that I think it's disgusting. I don't know if it's the state of Florida or if it's the feds or whatever that are putting her through this hell about, I guess she's trying to claim the property, her son's property or something.
She's trying to settle his estate.
Settle his estate. And look, you know, it's disgusting, and this leads to some larger you know, thinking exercises that I wanted to call you about before. But I think it's disgusting what this country does to people like Juanita. I think it's you know, it makes me think of my dad, you know, when my mom went into her nursing home, and there was no way my dad My dad worked all his life. He was, he's a single breadwinner. My mom helped him with his fly shot. My dad got me through college and law school where I was able to walk away debt free. Okay. My dad was able to do that, raise three kids, own this really nice home, buy his second home outright. He was worth about $500,000 after all was said and done, counting the house that he bought outright. They basically impoverished him so that my mom could go on Title 19. And some may think, oh, that's fair. No, it's not. He paid into the system all his fucking life.
Right.
And he gets shit for Social Security. And when I think about how the wealthy just keep getting wealthier and wealthier and wealthier, it's because of what they did to my dad, what they do to all of us. And, you know, and this is bringing in, and what they're doing to Juanita now. And I know Democrats are trying to redress these wrongs. Okay. And my apologies. It's going to be a conversation that's all over the goddamn map because that's, you know, my thinking is like
wherever, and I can, wherever you want to go,
wherever it takes it. Okay. Chuck Schumer. I wanted to kind of bring him up. Okay. And, you know, I'm actually more pleased with Chuck than I thought I would be at this point in time. Okay. And I think we were all not very sanguine about Chuck and his role as majority, being the majority leader of the Senate. He had a presser yesterday. I think it was yesterday, and I didn't watch it live, but I caught it today on C-SPAN. And I'm more impressed with him than I thought I would be at this point. And Chuck kind of, to me, represents kind of a nexus between the new and the old. I read an article. It was very brief. It was more of a blurb. I didn't really do a deep dive into it. That he courts people like AOC because he knows she can do some serious damage to him. And he seems to be very friendly with Bernie. During his press conference, he calls out, Mitch McConnell, but he's also friends with Mitch McConnell, but he'll call him out on his bullshit to a certain extent. He also revealed that he supported Bernie's $6 trillion, infrastructure plan. He was all for it. Now, I take that with a bit, I take that with a grain of salt because Chuck is an old dog. He's been around the block. He knows how things work. And maybe I'm being cynical, a tad bit cynical, in the sense of skeptical. Maybe I should say skeptical, not cynical, but skeptical. Or cynical in the skeptical sense in that he knows strategy. And probably by, getting on board with Bernie's plan, which he knows had not a prayer in passing, he's taking the extreme, which also kind of helps in the negotiations to bring it more towards the middle. But I give him some credit because even though he's an old dog that's been there for years, he's basically courting the likes of AOC, who was recently asked by Dana Bash, if she wants to run against Chuck Schumer. And I think that AOC was noncommittal in that particular interview. But he is not so arrogant as to dismiss her. He recognizes her power as a progressive. And I appreciate that. And he's trying to work with her and other members of the squad. Okay. That stated, again, like I said, he's at that nexus. He still uses terminology. And I just thought experiments because I know you're big on thought experiments and I am too. Not that it necessarily gets me anywhere. I know it gets you places, but I'm a good question asker. But he'll say things like the average American, the middle class. And he brought that up again. and the middle class, the hard-working middle class. And that this package, the infrastructure package, is to benefit hard-working families. And I'm like, do we as Democrats, and progressive liberals need to kind of start questioning this terminology? I'm sick of hearing me referred to as the average American. Average as to what? I'm sick of hearing the concept of the middle class, which presupposes that there is something below that, a poor class and an uber wealthy class. I'm sick of hearing about hardworking American and how that's valued. We're forced into busting our asses. And what if you fall out of that? Like, the pandemic brought out a lot in all of us. It brought out your desire to self-actualize as a woman. And a lot of people who are like, life is too fucking short. And we're killing ourselves, and for what? I don't fall within that hardworking family group that Chuck Schumer is talking about. I fall outside of, it's like, what if you busted your ass all your life and you're at the point now where you're realizing that all the hard work didn't amount to much. I brought in, I started crunching the numbers, and I due to poor record keeping on my part, because I've had multiple clients over the years, I'm basing it on four major clients in the last 23 years that I've had, 23 of my 26 years. I brought in almost $21 million in grants for them. I have no idea if that's a lot or not. It probably isn't. It depends on the type of client. If you look at the type of client I have, most of them are small clients. They get small grants, and very infrequently do they go for big grants. I don't know if that's a lot or not. It may sound like a lot to some. It may sound like not a lot to others. But I worked nonstop, extremely hard, those 26 years, helping out about 100 grants per year, which is quite a bit if you think about it, because some funders will give like 2,500 and they expect the world. Other grants you could write, other funders you could write one letter and overnight you've got $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. It really is so up in the air. It's just so nebulous to quantify it. My success rate can be as low as 29% to as high as 83% in terms of bringing in grants, depending on the client. My business brought in about $2.3 million for me. I don't have that money at all to show for that. It's not in my bank account. Nowhere near it. Okay? And you have to ask why. Well, as a self-employed person, who is her own employer, I've been shocked to the nines in taxes. I have very little to show for that. Now, outside of assets, I do have a house. It's the smallest house on the street. It has to be constantly modified. There's a shit ton of money I'm pumping into that to be able to continue to live independently in my home as a disabled woman. So when I hear Chuck and others, even on the Democratic side, hardworking Americans, it's like, fuck you. What if I've been working hard and what if I'm exhausted? I'm exhausted. I am exhausted. And there is no way you're going to tell me that the likes of Jeff Bezos or Virgin Atlantic, Richard Branson. You're not going to tell me, and I'll get to Elon Musk in a second, but you're not going to tell me that they're busting their asses on an hourly basis like I have been doing for the last 26 years to warrant the kind of money that they're making. Musk is nuts. Musk, I think, does knock himself out. I mean, he's so committed to whatever craziness he's committed to that he's even, like, down, he sold all of his properties, all that stuff. He's living in basically those unique new box homes, I guess, so that he doesn't have to worry about day-to-day life operations that consume the rest of us. Agnes, me, all those kind of day-to-day operations that take us away from work necessarily, they're work, it's work, or being quote unquote poor, you know, being a poor person, which can, you know, that alone takes incredible resources, emotional, mental, and psychological, physical resources to survive. Let alone, you know, just survive and try to walk that fine line of not going into complete destitution while you're on the street. It's like,
and let's factor something in there too, Darlene. Namely that you and I are part of the generation that got screwed by Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan in 1986. And you know, I remember when Tweety, Chris, what's his name, used to be within MSNBC. He'd get all misty-eyed and talk about when Ronald Reagan and Tip O'Neill took their jackets off in the Oval Office and rolled up their sleeves and came to a bipartisan agreement. And every time I would hear Chris Matthews, and every time I'd see him doing that crap, I'd say, "And screwed me."
Yeah, it's part of the it's part of that whole legend, you know, the legend of all history of all that. That is continues to be perpetrated into the current, you know, our current time. So, I guess that what I'm saying is that I appreciate Chuck. I think he's too old to change his vernacular, but I'm really sick of hearing about average American middle class. I feel like perpetrates the disparities.
Well,
and I don't think
it's just jingo, Darlene. Just jingo.
Yeah. Vernacular jingo. Yeah. And
you know, and this is the part of the speech where we put hardworking American middle class families.
Right. I just, you know, what if you work? You know, it's like I don't know if you feel this way, Robin, and maybe every generation is going through this, but I feel like our generation, your Gen X, they're like me. And Gen Xers are powerful. You better not fuck with us. Looks like we're able to, like, we're basically shapeshifters. We know our shit. But we always fall outside of the things that are there to try to benefit. To benefit all. It seems like the other generations may benefit. And whereas we're falling outside of that. And I could be wrong again. I'm definitely being cynical, but I'm exhausted. I'm exhausted. The pandemic over a year plus, I'm exhausted. It's like, I'm just like you. I'm thinking, shit, life is too short. It's too short. And I'm looking at jobs. I'm under pressure because I did finally get my PUA back, my pandemic unemployment assistance. And through September 4th, you know, that I'll be getting the federal and state, and then I guess the federal piece ends September 4th. I guess I could still claim the state end, but you know, now I am required to show at least 3 attempts per week, per claim week, of trying to find work. Okay. I'm so experienced as a grant writer, you know, I don't know, I can't explain what's happening, but I have to make at least one client contact per week. And I'm not even clear on what a client contact is. But I've been making outreach, applying for grant writing. There was one that I was an absolute shoo-in for. Absolute shoo-in. It's in the domestic violence realm. I've been doing it for 20-some-odd years. It's shit pay. It's fully remote. Everything. They called me for an informational telephone interview. I didn't get past the informational telephone interview. My references were excellent. One of the references was a personal friend of the executive director of the organization and met with her, raved about me, raved to other people. I didn't even get to that level. I didn't get to the virtual interview level. It was a fully remote interview process. Didn't get there. I submitted an article to BuzzFeed News, to BuzzFeed, for their reader thing. I said, let me try that, you know, because I want to get back into writing and publishing, like freelance writing, in addition to grant writing, because that's what I truly want to do and love to do. No response. I have muscular dystrophy. I've sent two emails to Quest magazine saying, hey, I'd like to submit an article about what life is like living with FSHD. It's totally within my bailiwick. It's totally within their bailiwick. No response. It's like I can't get a response. It's like there's something wrong. And then I internalize it like, this is me. I must be attracting this. There must be something wrong. It's like I really think things are more fucked up than we realize. On a work, you know, no matter what Biden is saying, oh, we acquired 800,000 jobs this month and blah, blah, blah. That may be true. But I think that there's been some serious systemic damage done by that orange ape who's still trying to do more damage. And it's like, you know, I can't help but think. It's like, is it my disability? Is it my age? What the hell's going on here? Something's wrong. So, and I think you know, I'm a very capable person. So, I can't quite put my finger on it, but I'm questioning everything in terms of how the society, not that we didn't before, but I feel that Juanita hit the nail on the head, and her words are so ominous when she said, I feel like we're on the precipice. And coming from someone like Juanita, who's been around the block and has been through even more tragedy than anything I'm bitching about up to this point. When she says that, you know, we're in big trouble. Even more so than, you know, what Scott from San Diego, what Scott has said, you know, we're all screwed up or rotten now. So it's like, I also don't think, we're burning up. We're burning up environmentally. We're burning up with COVID. You know, Steve from New York sent me he sent me an article with this harrowing thumbnail. I'm sure he sent it to you. The map that showed the United States COVID outbreak last year compared to this time next year. Or excuse me, this time this year right now, and it's frightening. The juxtaposition is frightening. And I don't feel like our political leaders are taking it seriously. You know, even to Chuck Schumer, it's like, get on a vacation. Y'all, you need to be there in Washington addressing this issue now in August. Everything is crumbling down around us. I don't want to, you know, and listening... I'm sorry. I'm kind of sounding like Mike Malloy, who's seeking me out. Because, I mean, you talk about I'm doom and gloom. He's like really doom and gloom. Juanita's right. We've reached a precipice. Are you still there? Or have I killed you?
I've been here. I'm just taking it all in.
I feel like the Democrats are trying, but it's too little too late. And again, I feel like I'm going to fall outside. I'm going to be on the margins again in terms of this incredible
infrastructure package, which we know is nowhere near where it should be. You know, the same fucking talk of bipartisanship is going to get us a diluted plan.
Right. The only way it gets to be bipartisan is by not doing a bunch of the shit that needs to be done. Meanwhile, you know, that idiot attack blonde on Onan, Darlene, said, well, this thing's got planting flowers by the side of the road. You know, really, is that where we are now? The goddamn maggots hate flowers? I mean, do they well, understand you know, anything? Do they even understand the concept of erosion control?
Well, and my mind keeps going back to Inhofe.
And his snowball.
That motherfucker. And the snowball. You know, where's he? He's awfully fucking quiet, that motherfucker. I want, you know, him and others, really, when everything is crashing down around us, I'm sorry. I'm not going to say what I'm thinking. But, you know, I'm not going to say it. I'm not going to say it. You know, because, you know, Fred from wherever is listening. I'm not going to say it. But I'm thinking it. It's like, okay, let me go back to this. It's a scene that I can never, I just can't get out of my head. But it's from Hunt for Red October. Okay? And the Russian submarine.
Oh,
the Russian
you idiot,
captain.
You have killed like, us?
Yes.
That line?
And he looks at him, and of course, they in the theaters, you know, when you watch it in the video, they cover it up, and he says, you ass, you've killed us.
Yeah. You know, that line comes in awfully handy and a lot on a number of occasions.
Doesn't it? Oh, it's like, you know, like, that's not a boating accident, or we need a bigger boat. It goes right up there with that. So, anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there.
I'm glad you did.
You know, Chuck, in terms of Chuck and where he is at, I'm more impressed with him than I thought I would be at this point. But we get shit that's just so diluted. And I wish he would change the vernacular. I appreciate that he sees the power in AOC. I appreciate that. And I appreciate that he's trying to do the right thing. But damn it, I wish he would stop saying average American. I wish he would stop saying middle class. And again, I don't know what the replacements are. And I just wanted to throw that out there for thinking experiments because, again, we don't have a middle class unless it's kind of sort of like legislated in. And hardworking families, and you have to work hard and all of this bullshit about the, you know, the based on the whole, you know, Puritan work ethic. And it's like, I'm sick of it. Because what if you have done that and there's not much to show for it? And again, there are people who would look at my situation and say, what are you complaining about, bitch? But I'm telling you, it's like, I'm worried. I'm scared because I'm, you know, every 2 minutes, it's something that I have to spend money on that it's like, I'm chipping away at what's left. And there isn't much left. And so it's like, is this infrastructure plan going to benefit me in any way? I don't think so. I always seem to outpace those benefits. And unless I sit there and claim full disability, you know.
Yeah, and then everything falls apart.
Well, it falls apart and. Right. And like I said, you know, my dad contributed into the system all his life and they should not have done what they did to him. They shouldn't have done it. And the poor man is still haunted. He still feels like the state's going to come and take whatever he has left that is going to be our, you know, our meager inheritance. He wants me to talk to the lawyer that, you know, drew up everything back when my mom went in and was trying to get on Title 19. I said, Dad, I can't do that. I was not the client. Plus, I am a future inheritor or potential heir. and it could be viewed as a conflict of interest. Dad, you've got to call him yourself and talk to, you know, because he keeps getting a letter every year that says that he could still be on the hook for my mother's care. And I said, no, that's not the case, Dad. I really don't think that's what that says. You need to, you know, just to ease your mind, call the attorney. It shouldn't cost you anything. It'll probably take 2 seconds to look at the case and say yay or nay. And if they call you in, it's probably a free consultation. And if you want me to talk to them, you got to give me permission.
You know, elder law is a subspecialty within the practice.
Oh, it is. And I told them, I said, look, I've never practiced it. Even when I was practicing, it's a subspecialty, and you just, I think you'll be okay.
It's all of it. I mean, I had classes in it in law school. I never did much in the way of practicing it, but it's I know it's complicated, and there's all kinds of lookbacks.
And I can't. So that's why I think you really need. And he's like, but I can't. I don't know how to say it like you. I don't have to articulate it like you. And I feel so bad for the man. I'm like, call them and give me permission to talk to them. I think you'll be okay, but you have to give me the permission. And they still may be uncomfortable with it because there's an inherent conflict of interest. So, you know, and the poor man's been bringing this up every year to me. Every year he's been worried about this one thing and this stupid paper pushing form letter that the Department of Social Services sent him every year. You know, so it's like, it's sad because they shouldn't be putting people like my dad, they shouldn't be putting people like Juanita through this.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, this is the worst aspect of bureaucracy. Hey, Darlene, I hate to do it, dear, but this is that night I have to quit early.
You do? Okay, I'm sorry. Okay,
No. I've got a committee meeting to attend, and
okay. I thought that was last night. Okay, because I didn't get
I've got two nights a month, like I said at the beginning of the program.
Go, girl.
And it's, you know, one's on a Wednesday and the other one's on a Thursday, and this is that week.
And I apologize to the Horn listeners for throwing all this crap out there. I'm really sorry.
You have nothing to apologize for. Don't you dare. Don't you dare. No, this is all good material, and you know, I earnestly wish I didn't have to end it because there's all places to go with this, and I hope we can pick it up and run with it in another program sometime so very soon.
Me too. I'm sure we will. Good luck with the committee meeting, and I'll talk to you soon, my friend. Take care.
Okay, thank you, darling.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Have a good night. Bye. That's our pal Darlene in Connecticut. And there's nothing there in what she said to argue with. It's maddening, and it's infuriating. And, you know, they throw around middle class like it's, you know, something that's more than what it is. After 40, you know, beginning on January 20th, 1981, the methodical destruction of the middle class has the Republicans have largely accomplished their goals. No more, you know, unions weakened, job protections weakened, regulations weakened. All these things play into what we understand as the middle class. But I do have to get out of here, so thank you very kindly to everybody who jumped in on the challenges this evening. There's one $10 challenge left, and it looks like tomorrow we will be staring down the barrel of a fundraising goal of $1,320. And that is a long way to go and a short time to get there. So thank you one and all. We'll keep this going as long as we possibly can. You're the reason it still exists. Thanks to our Patreon and PayPal subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thanks to each and every one of you who shares your precious finite time engaging in this program in whatever manner you so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you to Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Hey, remember, brand new Fresh Malloy on the way, 9 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6 p.m. Pacific. The best place to listen to the first run of Malloy is headon.live. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Please stay safe, everybody. Get your vaccine if you haven't already. Encourage someone who hasn't gotten it to get it. Wear your mask. Wash your hands. Don't touch your face. Take your hand sanitizer everywhere you go and use it every time. Use it damn near constantly. Maintain your social distance. For God's sakes, if somebody comes burbling down the action alley at Wally World hollering about how there are bird guts everywhere, avoid that person like the plague, because he is. Later.